Giants looking for a stop.
What the hell's going on out here?
They're going to air it out. Rodgers does this better than anybody. End zone, Cobb, touchdown!
R-E-L-1-1. Packers lose in Atlanta to the Atlanta Falcons. Get boat raced. The first, two quarters and a half? But they come back, make it look a little bit more respectable after some iffy calls, some bad play all around, and some injuries. It wouldn't be the Green Bay Packers if injuries didn't already take this team down a dreary dark hole by week two. That's what else should you expect? But the Falcons beat the Packers 34-23 to open up their brand new stadium in Atlanta, to send the Packers to 1-1. But folks, we tell it to you every week. We're gonna tell it to you this week. It's week two. R-E-L-A-X. Relax. I'm your host, Mike, and joining me, as always, Titletown Ty. Ty, are you feeling okay today after the beatdown on last Sunday night?
Oh, I'm fine. It's like you said, everybody needs to just slow down and just R-E-L-A-X about this. Have a beer, take a breath, and just chill out. It's week two. And I mean, you got to look at the facts of this game. Like you said, injuries. Injuries played a huge part in this game. I don't know that anybody from any team could have come out missing both their starting tackles and then have guys dropping left and right like we did, especially in the first half, and have expected even being competitive.
Yeah, especially against the defending NFC champs.
Yeah, too. I mean, Atlanta does not appear to be, you know, out here suffering from some Super Bowl hangover, although I'm pretty sure that the fans in the building were starting to get a little nervous when the offense finally did start to find some kind of rhythm there.
Yeah, man, once the Packers got a couple of touchdowns there in the fourth quarter and made it, I think, guess cut it to 11 or whatever the final score used to be, I was like, you know, if the Packers can, if the Packers defense can get a stop here, like a three and out,
yeah,
and get Aaron Rodgers the ball back, there's going to be a lot of tight buttholes in the seats in the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But that didn't happen, of course, because Packers defense, come on, you can't ask too much from them.
Well, it is what it is.
It is what it is. But we'll dig into the game. Talk about why you shouldn't feel too down on your Green Bay Packers after 2 weeks of play. A good showing in week one, a bad showing in week two. But we get the Cincinnati Bengals and brand new offensive coordinator Bill Lazor coming to Lambeau
Lazor
Field this Sunday. Yes, we'll talk about the Lazor effect. Coming up on Sunday as the Packers host the Cincinnati Bengals. How will injuries affect the Packers coming up on Sunday? We'll get into that. We've got our NFC North Power Rankings coming up here in just a moment. A little bit of news to touch on. And, of course, we'll review stat lines and give our stat lines for the Bengals game coming up. And I am ready to if one good thing came out of this game, boy, you thought you had a good week last week with Ty Montgomery.
Yeah.
Boy, I hit it. Ooh, right on the head. I can't wait to get to that. But first, let's open up the show with our Week 2 NFC North Power Rankings. And I will go first this week. You gave us yours first last week. I will return the favor this week.
All right.
And number four, I've got the return of the Basement Bears. After a strong showing against Atlanta in Week 1, they come out in Week 2 and get completely rolled over by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Blasted.
Just it wasn't even funny how bad they got beat by the Bucs, which, you know, in all fairness to the Bears, the Bucs did have, 3 weeks to prepare for them, basically?
Pretty well,
yeah, so they were coming out with all bases covered going up against the Chicago team. So, you know, it is what it is. Bears are 0-2. I think we'll probably be seeing Mitchell Trubisky by week 8 if things continue this way. Wouldn't be shocked if, you know, they're 2-6 or something by the week 8 mark, and then they throw Trubisky in to see if he can see what he's got. So we'll see if the Bears can dig their way out of that number 4 spot at some point during the season. At number 3 this week, I've got the Vikings slipping down a spot at 1-1. Yeah, no Sam Bradford, so take the loss to Pittsburgh with a grain of salt. I don't think anybody thought Case Keenum was going to go and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. I still think they're a good team with a real shot at the playoffs. I think they got a good defense. I think Dalvin Cook still looks like he could be a steal in the second round for the Vikings.
Oh, he's legit.
Yeah, so I still like the Vikings. They did slip to number 3 this week at 1-1. At number 2, moving up a spot, the Detroit Lions, 2-0. Yeah, I know the Detroit Lions are 2-0 and the Packers are 1-1. But at the same time, the Packers have faced the Seattle Seahawks and the Legion of Boom and the defending NFC champions in their own home, opening up a brand new stadium, and they're 1-1. The Lions have beaten a New York Giants team who hasn't scored more than 20 points in, what, 8 straight games now or some ridiculous number?
They're bad.
Yeah,
they're so bad.
It's looking terrible right now in New York. But they beat the Giants, and they beat a Cardinals team who I thought was going to come into the season and be a little bit better than what apparently they are, because then after the Cardinals lost to the Lions, they went up and barely squeaked by in an overtime loss to Jacoby Brissett and the Indianapolis Colts. So maybe the Cardinals aren't quite as good as we were all thinking. So, you know, yeah, the Lions, 2 nice wins, but still wanting to see them play against some better competition. Yeah, I like the Giants' defense quite a bit, but boy, Eli Manning and that offensive line, good Lord.
It's McAdoo just rolled Eli right under the bus after the game, but
I don't know who to blame for that. I mean, they even had Odell Beckham back for that game, so that excuse went out the window when they scored 10 against the Lions.
Apparently there were punches thrown in the locker room, too, from Odell Beckham. 2 other players, not Walls.
Not a wall?
So, yeah, no wall.
Well, that's surprising. That's Odell Beckham's self-destructing, I think.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, we can get into that in another day. We'll bring a New York bozo Dustin on for that conversation. But at number 1, and I still have the Packers at number 1. Yes, tough loss, suffered some tough injuries, but I still feel like overall this is the best team in the NFC North. If they continue a skid and it all goes to hell after the loss to the Falcons over the next 3 or 4 weeks, then yeah, it's they're probably. I don't know if there's going to be another RELAX moment for this team or another run the table moment for this team. I felt like this is if they were going to do it and put together a 12-4, 13-3, 1 or 2 seed in the playoff type of season, this would be the year. If they can't do it this year, there has to be some changes made in the offseason. But as of now, I'm not overreacting. I'm not panicking. We lost some good players, a lot of our top starter players in this game, and we lost to a damn good team in the Atlanta Falcons. So, but I still think overall the Packers are still the best team in the NFC North. Ty, how do you see the NFC North after 2 weeks of play in the NFL?
Well, much in the same way that you see it, Mike. I've got the Bears still hanging around in the basement. They got absolutely blasted by the Buccaneers, who I think is a playoff team. I think the Bucs are for real this year, so credit to them. And
do you think the Bucs will struggle having to play 16 straight games this season with no bye week?
I think so. Anybody would. That's just... I don't even know about that. Them and the Dolphins.
Yeah.
But, they're still in the basement for me until they prove me wrong. Especially, I mean, they lost Kevin White, too. He's probably done for the season.
He wouldn't do anything anyway.
Oh, he was like their best receiver, so.
That ain't saying much.
Yeah, and at 3, I've got the Vikings. I felt like last week, I felt like it was fool's gold against the Saints. The Saints are just that bad. And I think even with Sam Bradford, I still don't think they would have been able to beat Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh still would have beat them pretty well. So, I don't know. I think the Vikings are going to have a good run game. I think Sam Bradford is still fool's gold. The defense is for real. I'll give them that. Any Mike Zimmer defense is a real defense. I just think the offense is they're such a flip from the Packers. Their strength is their defense. Their weakness is their offense. When the day is done, the Lions, I've got it number two. What have they really done?
Exactly.
You know, it just about anybody would be 2-0 after the two teams that they've played, except maybe the Bears. But you know, they
even the Bears might be 1-1.
Yeah, you know, they may be. hell, I think the Colts might be 1-1 with their opening schedule. I think the Colts could have beat the Giants. I think the Browns could have walked in and beat the Giants on Monday night. But and then Green Bay, I've still got at the top. I think they're still the best overall team in the division. I think they just got a bad skid with Atlanta having to open a brand new stadium for a team on the road in a dome for the second straight year. The defending NFC champs, who clearly are still right where they were last year before the Super Bowl meltdown. And I think this team has what it takes. It's just going to be a matter of them being healthy, staying healthy, and keeping it all put together on a more consistent basis. Which the Falcons was one of the losses I had in our season predictions. For my 13-3 prediction, so I'm not surprised. But I think there are a lot of positives to take away from this game, which we'll get into, even though the rest of the world seems to be having a damn meltdown. So,
yeah, it was a real fun environment to be on Twitter during that game.
Oh God,
people were hanging themselves in the closet during that game, it seemed like, but. But yeah, those are your Week 2 NFC North Power Rankings. Me and Ty wholeheartedly agree with each other this week. Moving on to the news, though. Not a lot of news. Some news that you actually broke to me just before we started the show tonight. Ricky Jean-Francois is back with the Packers.
Yes, sir.
So his departure, not very long-lived. I guess this is due, you know, mostly to Mike Daniels' injury.
I think they realized after Daniels went out, they need a little bit extra depth on that line, and old Ricky Jean-Francois, I think, can provide that. I think he's a solid rotational player. He does have that nose tackle experience if he needed to play that in a pinch, but I think after Daniels went down that game, the rotation was short and extremely tiresome for the guys we had out there.
Yeah, and you could see how the loss of Daniels really affected the run defense, too.
Yeah, that was big. That's really the only news for this week. No real other transactions. The team did bring in, like, several street free agents for team visits and whatnot. Nobody of note. A few wide receivers, some linemen, you know. But that's just what teams do all year long. They always take looks at guys. So nothing to talk about there.
Yeah, the only other bit of news that I had written down to talk about is Ron Wolf got awarded his own street in Green Bay. Ron Wolf Way.
Yeah, congratulations to Ron Wolf there.
Yeah, thought that was pretty cool.
Injury report for the day. There were some full participants. Re-added here. We got Jordy Nelson was a full participant in practice with the quad. He's day-to-day, but he was a full participant. Jari Evans was a full participant. Brian Bulaga, back to full participation. Ahmad Brooks, another big name who is a full participant. Looks like he's clearing out of the concussion protocol. And Montrevious Adams was a full participant in practice.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the guys we had who did not practice, Jason Spriggs, who still looks to be missing several weeks, Jake Ryan, dealing with both a hamstring and possible concussion, Nick Perry did not practice with a hand issue, but if he has to wear a club, we're not going to sweat over that.
nothing new.
Yeah, Devon House with a quad ailment, Mike Daniels with the hip, Randall Cobb with his chest, Daniels and Cobb are also both day-to-day, nothing significant on their MRIs on Monday. So I'd say it's likely we'll still see them on Sunday. Kentrell Bryce, who left the Atlanta game with a groin injury, did not play. No news there. And David Bakhtiari, still sitting out with the hamstring.
Whew.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
And it's only week two.
It's week two. Good God. Do the Packers, do they just not have a trainer anymore? Like, what is going on?
It's not just Green Bay. I mean, Atlanta lost some key guys in their game, too. You know, Vic Beasley went out. Their right tackle, he went out early with concussion.
Yeah.
It's not just Green Bay. I know it seems like we get the worst of it every year, but there are a lot of teams missing a lot of guys already. And I know the players wouldn't want to hear it. The players would surely disagree with me, but I feel like so many of these injuries, because a lot of them are soft tissue injuries, hamstrings, quads, things like that,
mm-hmm.
they happen because these guys at the start of the season are no longer in the type of football shape that guys used to be in before the last CBA. There's so much less contact in practice, so much less padded practice. Starters don't play in the preseason anymore virtually at all. And guys' bodies are just not ready come the start of the season.
Yeah, the first, like, 2 or 3 weeks of the season are pretty much the preseason
for the starters because
you don't see them at all in the preseason. So I noticed there's a lot of groin injuries coming out of this game. Do you think it's just because Atlanta came in and kicked us right in the nuts or what?
You know, conventional wisdom says yes, but I also have to wonder if – because there's always the question of artificial turf.
Yeah.
And you always...
especially brand new like that, too.
Yeah. And you always see more injuries with turf. Guys hate playing on turf, and I don't blame them. I've been on a turf field before, and it's horrible. Mm. It's hot. It's hotter than normal grass. And it's just... I'm a big believer in the fact that, to me, I feel like football should be played outside in the elements. And
yeah,
it's not a game to play inside.
No, man, you start in high school, Bud Hudson. There's no indoor stadiums. You know, even in college, is there any indoor stadiums?
Clemson plays in a dome, I believe. I think they play in the Carrier Dome. Yeah.
Well, it's very few and far between, unless there's like a special game going on at like a, you know, the Cowboy Stadium or something like that. But
you know, and speaking of that, I thought it was cool, and just to touch on it real quick, it's a college thing, but Arkansas and Texas A&M are going to be playing at Cowboy Stadium at AT&T Stadium this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones is an Arkansas alum, and to celebrate his Pro Football Hall of Fame induction and whatnot, the Razorbacks are wearing what amount to be Cowboys uniform copies for that game of their Navy uniforms, except they've swapped the Navy with red and the stars with the running hogs. They're pretty cool looking, but it's just an interesting thing to throw out there. I saw earlier, I thought it was pretty neat.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. But speaking of another thing, speaking of stadiums, that I thought was pretty cool for Arthur Blank and then the Atlanta Falcons with their new stadium. They touched on it during the game broadcast, the concession stands.
Yeah.
Like, set prices for everything, games, concerts, whatever happens there, it's going to be
cheap.
Like, yeah. Like I looked at it, I was like, holy shit, there's like a stadium in America that sells things at like a sane price. My God, I went to that baseball game in St. Louis. A month or so back, and it was like, good Lord, $15 for a beer, $10 for a hot dog, and I was like, who the, good Lord. But, you know, I thought that was really cool that you open up a brand new stadium like that and set concession prices at a sane rate. Unheard of in America.
Yeah, tip of the hat to Arthur Blank there. Classy move.
Yeah, very cool.
Great.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. But, that wraps up the news and our stadium tangent. So
yes, let's move on. Speaking of stadiums, let's move on past the concession stands and move into onto the field and talk about this Packers Falcons game that happened Sunday night on Sunday Night Football. Let's take a look at the stat lines. First and foremost, Ty, we'll let you go first. I'll save my gloating for last. But
not good.
That's all. It wasn't too bad. You had Ty Montgomery going for 76 yards rushing, one rushing touchdown. Finished the game with 35 yards rushing.
I had my rushing and receiving flip-flopped because he went for 75 yards receiving.
And 35 receiving. Rushing, yeah.
Yeah, I had it totally swapped around there.
Yeah, it's all right. It happens. Sometimes you're going so fast in that DeLorean, it's kind of hard to see at times.
Don't I know
it. Just
kind
of whips past you. But he had 35 yards rushing. One rushing touchdown, you did call that one, but he had, also had a receiving touchdown as well. Two total touchdowns for Ty Montgomery. Another good performance from Ty Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
Loving this guy more and more every week. Then you had Nick Perry coming out of the game with one sack, two tackles for a loss. Finished the game with zero sacks and four total tackles. I'm not sure how many of those were, if any, were for a loss.
Oh, Clay Matthews came in and scooped up Nick Perry's stats.
Oh, Clay Matthews looked great.
Yeah.
And then you had Martellus Bennett, who had a very rough night.
Ugh.
Very, very rough night. You had him with four receptions, 64 yards, and a touchdown. Finished the game with five receptions. Actually had one more than you predicted.
Yeah.
For 47 yards.
But the drops. Oh.
A lot of drops and a very bad call.
Yeah.
On him as well. We'll get to that, trust me, here in a moment. So, not your best effort. You cleaned up pretty well last week. Like you said, you almost had Ty Montgomery, but you just had him backwards there a little bit.
They have to dust off the crystal ball going into the Bengals game. We'll see.
I don't think we're that desperate yet. Whatever you want to do, I'm sticking with my DeLorean because I was this week. I'll get the bad one out of the way. I'll admit I laid a goose egg on one. Kyler Fackrell, I predicted he'd have six total tackles and one sack. Dude did nothing. Gave me a big old goose egg.
He didn't even show up on the stat sheet.
Yeah. He had a Joe Thomas week where he just wasn't even on the field. So yeah, okay, I missed on that one. My bad, y'all. My bad. Then I had Randall Cobb going for seven receptions, 87 yards, and a touchdown. Finished the game with six receptions for 60 yards. And if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, I think he would have caught another reception for 17 yards and a touchdown.
Well, and he had the touchdown. But, man,
yeah.
that another,
bad call.
Another
bad
play
call.
Another
bullshit call. But we'll get into that in a minute. But, folks, I got a gloat here. Last week, I predicted Ty Montgomery would finish the game with 110 all-purpose yards and one receiving touchdown. He finished the game with 110 all-purpose yards on the dot and two total touchdowns. He also had a rushing touchdown, but he also had a receiving touchdown, so that counts. So
Montgomery has been so good to us both.
Ty Montgomery may be my new favorite Packer.
And you know
that
what?
Is the first time I've ever just hit something on the dot like that.
There's so much to talk about with him right now, and I want to get into it. But yeah, stat lines, I'd be clapping for you if it wouldn't just destroy the audio, because it was good.
I'll clap for myself and pretend that it's you. All right. But yes, folks, as you can see, if you hate stat lines, move on, because we know what we're talking about here on the show. We can see the future. May not have seen the beat down.
We're getting pretty good at it. And you know Tony Romo's got our game this Sunday, so.
Yeah. We'll have to have a stat line duel with Tony Romo, try to get him on the show at some point. He may be the only one that can give us some competition. But let's dig into the game here. Let's first, you want to take a look at the positives or the negatives first? How do you want to start this off?
You know, with the world seemingly coming to an end on the internet out there, let's brush the negatives out of the way first so we can spend actual time on the positives.
All right, that sounds good with me. Well, the biggest negative for me coming out of this game, the injury bug.
Oh, yeah.
Bit hard in this game. You just went through the entire list of all the injuries that happened coming out of this game. How do you feel? I mean, Do you feel like any of the injuries that we've suffered in this game are going to have any real long-term lasting effects? The only one that I'm worried about that might have some long-term lasting effects, and just because they brought in Ricky Jean-Francois and all that, is Mike Daniels. I think Mike Daniels is probably the most key injury that we suffered in this game, yeah. Mainly for our run defense.
Well, like I said, between him, Cobb, and Nelson, they all underwent MRIs this week and came back negative, showing nothing of any significance going forward. So that's a huge bullet dodged right there with no tears, no breaks, no nothing. And it's just going to be a matter of them being day-to-day. All three, I think the team is leaning towards them being 50-50 for Sunday. But, you know, going forward, I'm not worried. I think we're going to be okay. They're usually pretty smart about handling their injuries properly. So I think we're going to be all right there.
How much of that do you feel like was possibly Mike McCarthy saying, you know, if any... any little thing seems to bother or seems to flare up on any of these players, Mike McCarthy's just going to play it safe and just keep him out of the game because, you know, it's week two. We don't have anything to prove right now.
Yeah, I could see if there's any setbacks going into the rest of the week. Yeah, especially going into it with the Bengals in a game that's not going to count as heavily into a tiebreaker-type scenario.
Yeah.
I could see them being cautious this week. Especially, you know, I mean, the Bengals are, well, they're what they are right now. But
I don't know what they are right now.
If there's a week to be cautious, I think this is a good week for it.
Well, we'll get into that. I think this upcoming game with the Bengals could be it could be a trap game. Of sorts for the Packers, and I'll explain why once we get to it. But let's stick to the Falcons game here. We talk about the injuries. That may be the biggest negative coming out of this game, but probably the second biggest negative that people are really talking about. Martellus Bennett really had a rough game, and it all seemed to culminate with the bad pass interference call that got called on him after that big Randall Cobb pass completion near the end of the first half. Let's go ahead and touch on it. That seems to be what everybody has been up in arms about all week long.
Everybody's calling it the turning point.
And it was. It really was, if you watch the game. The Packers, because if you think about it, if the Packers, if they wouldn't have called that pass interference call on Martellus Bennett, the Packers would have had the ball at midfield.
Midfield or better.
Yeah, they were down 17-7. Let's say at the very worst, the Packers have to kick a field goal to go in at the half down by 7. Instead, they get the pass interference call. It costs them not only the 30 yards or whatever Cobb got on that play, but it also backed them up 10 or 15, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then the very next play, Rodgers throws an interception looking for Geronimo Allison, who stopped in the middle of his route for some reason.
He just quit on the route.
Yeah, it's like he didn't think the ball was coming to him. He was just like, he's throwing to me. I better, you know, it's...
And, you know, if he doesn't quit on that route, he can at least keep that ball from being picked.
Yeah, fight for it. Do something. And I feel like Mike McCarthy, after that pick play, yeah, it was a bad call by the refs. And what we talked about last week, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the officiating and bitching and complaining about the officiating, because there was plenty to bitch about in this game. But McCarthy has to keep his cool, because if he loses his shit on the sidelines like that, it seems to trickle down to the rest of the team, and I think that's what happened at the end of that half. Once that went wrong for him, it was like, oh, shit, well, it's all downhill from here. You know what I mean?
I think once they came out after halftime,
I felt like they had just calmed themselves down and kind of got back into the game. But once that play happened, it was the real turning point, because I felt like this team just kind of just threw their hands in the air and said, what the fuck?
Well, and I get McCarthy's frustration because, and I applaud the call of running Bennett on the drag route and Cobb on the slant, because those are the type of plays that we've been asking for 2 years.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious that we don't have the speed, like just the greasy, nasty speed at receiver that some other teams have, like the Falcons. So you look for us to call plays similar to how New England does with picks and rubs. rubs are legal everywhere. Picks are legal within a yard, as long as they're not, you know, flat out obvious, like you're trying to set a basketball pick. But and Bennett was running a drag route. He was within a yard, and it's been confirmed that shouldn't have been called. But these are the type McCarthy's here trying to scheme guys open. Something we've been asking for on this show. Run some stuff to scheme some guys open, and especially with a guy like Cobb who can take a 2 yard pass and turn it into 30 quicker than you can blink. That's what you have to do. And I, you know, I get his frustration because teams like the Patriots get those breaks. They don't generally call picks and rubs on the Patriots. But here we are trying to do this, and there it is. Which I'm sure there's going to be some real discussion about it with the officials before the Bengals game. And, you know, probably every game from here on out that these types of things are going to happen. But we're doing it within the bounds of the rules.
I mean, McCarthy, you creepy dogs. Sorry, I got Piper in the kennel over here. She barks. I look over at the glass doors, and there's Shiloh again, laying up on the couch, just peeking her head over, just staring at me in the dark. Good Lord. But McCarthy, I mean, I just feel like he went over. I mean, yeah, it was a bad call. It cost your team.
No, he went overboard.
I mean, he got the unsportsmanlike conduct for it, which cost his team even more. I mean, it was on like a kickoff or something, so it really it wasn't too bad. But, you know, it's just... I felt like that was the turning point in the game because instead of being down 7, all of a sudden they have to punt it away and the Falcons go in like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah.
And it's 24-7. And it's like, well, now you've really dug yourself a hole.
Well, and then, you know, that's that issue. Like you said, we're not going to spend all the time talking about the officiating and everything else. Bennett had his issues with his drops, but I don't look for that to be something that continues. I think it was just a bad game for him. And people have that. I mean, good God, we can suffer through one game of drops from Martellus Bennett. We suffered through seasons worth with Jermichael Finley trying to get his head on straight. So,
I think Bennett will be all right. I think he had a rough game, and it just seemed like nothing went right for him.
Yeah.
And I don't even think he was going for the pick on that, honestly.
No, I think he was trying to run his route.
Dude was in his way. So, I don't know. It was a bad call, but McCarthy's got to keep his cool. Touching on some of the other negatives in this game before we look at some of the positives. This secondary.
Oh, man.
Outside of maybe Kevin King. I mean, as a whole, Kevin King and Morgan Burnett, I thought, played well. The rest of the secondary looked like hot garbage.
They couldn't tackle. It looked like the same type of crap that we have dealt with this defense for years. They could not tackle.
No, they would.
Even when they were in position.
It was like they would throw themselves down at the feet of the receiver and just hope the receiver would trip over their ass or something. Like, that's.
And I mean, you're going to have to get in there and really tackle somebody, especially these receivers. Jones is a big guy. You know, he's 6'3. He's hard to tackle. I get it. But you got to do it. Mohamed Sanu, he's another dude. He's a, you know, decently big, strong receiver. You got to get in there and tackle him. This arm tackle stuff, I mean, good God, you could play the clips of Lombardi all day talking about everybody's grabbing out there.
Yeah.
That's all they were doing.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But Rollins and Randall.
Oh, my God.
We talked about it before we got on the show. Are these guys, are they ever going to grow into the role, or are they just two busts?
You know what? And you said it before the show, and you hit the nail on the head. This is oftentimes what happens when you draft a college safety and a college point guard and ask them to play corner. It doesn't – you know, this is an example of – and we talked about it before the show. We don't put all this on Dom Capers because he gets handcuffed with these kind of things because you're drafting players like this. You're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. You go out and draft Kevin King, who is a corner.
And what do you know? He looks like he can play corner.
And, oh my God, he comes out here and he can play corner.
Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought?
Yeah. And we cannot afford at this point to have to wait on the development time of Randall and Rollins like we did with Nick Perry. I love Nick Perry. I love what he's doing. I love the player that he has become. But a first-round pick should be making some type of an impact in his rookie year, should definitely be making an impact by year two, and it should not take 4 to 5 years to develop a first-round pick into a viable starter. That's not what a first-round pick is. And we got a first-round and a second-round pick right here in Randall and Rollins looking lost all the time.
Yeah, it's... Y'all hush! I'm going to have to get those dogs. No, you cannot be on the show. What? I got one dog at the door, one dog in the kennel. How? What? Hang on, give me just a second.
Go ahead. The ferrets are sleeping peacefully.
Oh, nice. What do you want? What do you want? Hush.
Oh, shit.
All right, you guys be quiet.
I almost made a really bad mistake. There was a thumbtack under the computer desk, and I was sitting here rolling it around with my foot and didn't realize what it was. The pointy end was sticking in the carpet, thankfully enough, but I leaned down there and looked at it, and sure enough, thumbtack. I almost just stabbed that in my foot.
Okay, I'm going to have to pause this. These dogs are acting like assholes.
Okay, just give me a 1, 2, 3 pause.
All right, 1, 2, 3 pause.
All right.
All right. All right, after some canine difficulties on the show, we're back. But yeah, we're talking about Rollins and Randall here. I really wish at least one of them would pan out to be a viable starting quarterback. Like, you know, like... I'll take one out of the two, you know, but...
And out of the two, I feel like Randall has the better chance out of the two because I feel like he's more athletically gifted than Rollins is. But I just don't know, man. It's like they both just seem so lost and out of place almost all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. Even Ha-Ha looked bad in this game.
Oh, he did not look good in that game. He looked... I don't know. Everybody's team seemed just such a step slow.
Do you think maybe there's a mental aspect going into this game because they got blazed by the Falcons twice last year, and especially in that NFC title game, as bad as they got beat? You think they're just kind of like they're more worried about, you know, God, I better not miss this tackle. I better make sure that I'm and they're overthinking it. They're not just playing with, you know.
You hope not, because these guys are pros. And you hope that as pros, they can put that behind them and go forward. You know, you hear guys often talk, especially corners in the NFL, talk about how to be an NFL corner, you have to have a short memory.
Yeah.
So you would hope that's not the case, but I don't know. I mean, I can't really speculate on it.
I mean, I just had that feeling overall throughout the entire night. Like, when McCarthy lost his cool and they kind of just kind of threw everything into the wind near the end of the first half, it feels like the Packers feel like, oh, geez, if we don't play a spot-on perfect game, we can't hang with these guys. It feels like they know they can't beat this team. And when things don't go their way, it's almost like they say, well, what the hell? Like, it's over. It's over before... It's almost like they're defeated before the game even starts. I don't know why.
Well, and I used to feel that way about them concerning San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. Every team has some team's number. You know what I mean?
That's like we talked about before with the Chargers and the Colts.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't matter how bad the Chargers were. When they met the Colts in the playoffs, it was almost a guarantee they were putting the Colts out.
Yeah, every year. Some teams have other teams' numbers. Like, you go back to when the Packers couldn't beat Dallas.
Yeah,
all those years, and now it seems like the other way around. Dallas can't beat. I mean, they beat us last year in regular season, but when the playoffs roll around,
when
they can't
it matters,
beat us. Yeah, when it matters, they can't do it.
They got torched on Sunday too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was What was that? Ezekiel Elliott, 9 carries for 8 yards or something like that?
Yeah, and Jason Garrett publicly called him out for quitting on plays. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't need to suspend him. He'll just quit.
He suspends himself.
But, I mean, that's – I think that really is all I want to touch on the negatives. I've really tried to look for a lot more positives to try to take away from this going forward.
Yeah, and believe it or not, there are some positives coming out of this game. And first positive comes to mind, Aaron Rodgers becomes the fastest quarterback to throw 300 touchdown passes in NFL history on a shovel pass to Ty Montgomery.
Left-handed
shovel pass. I mean, who would have thought that? If you would have told me Aaron Rodgers throws his 300th touchdown pass left-handed, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. But he did it. So,
I don't know if you saw it. James Jones congratulated him on Twitter and said that, sorry, I caught touchdown pass number 200. Had I known, I wouldn't have thrown it into the crowd.
Oh, well. But congratulations, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Tough night. Tough night, but, you know, he... What is he, the fastest quarterback to throw to 300 touchdown passes in NFL history with, the fewest interceptions godly amount?
I think the next closest person with the interceptions, I think it was Brady. I think he had thrown something like 115 or something like that interceptions by the time he threw touchdown 300, and Rodgers had thrown, well, with this game, 73.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good God, man.
Yeah, and everybody chill out on this what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers thing this
year.
He's
fine.
Yeah, I saw people like, Aaron Rodgers, it's 2 games in, and Aaron Rodgers already thrown 2 interceptions.
You know what? He was missing both tackles.
Yeah, and the first interception he threw last week was a fluky play to a defensive tackle, and then the interception he threw this week was more so on Geronimo Allison not doing his job.
Yeah.
So, calm down, folks. Aaron Rodgers is fine.
Yeah, I'm not having those conversations this year.
Yeah.
That dominated so much of last year, it's something that doesn't even need to be talked about.
It got to a point where I was up at like 5 in the morning on Game Pass watching the coach's tape of Aaron Rodgers games from 3 years ago, like breaking down his footwork and shit like that. I'm like, what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers? I'm trying to figure it out. And I came to the conclusion nothing's wrong with Aaron Rodgers, and he proved that last year.
Yeah.
But you spoke of it a second ago. You mentioned the both starting offensive tackles were out in this game. I thought a positive coming out of this game was Kyle Murphy and Justin McCray both held up surprisingly well.
I agree. They got beat a few times, as you know, Justin McCray was making his very first game action. He had never played an NFL snap up to this game, and he was up here having to try to block Vic Beasley.
Yeah,
I mean, in a new stadium, on the road, can it be worse for a guy making his first game action there? And then Murphy, he's pretty well only trained at right tackle, and he gets swung over to left tackle. I think they both played admirably, and there were times that Rodgers had good time in the pocket.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I thought Rodgers would have been killed. Because we talked about this last week. If Bakhtiari and Bulaga are both out,
just put Hundley in
and save your quarterback. I mean, Rodgers did almost get killed on that one hit. I don't know, I forgot.
Well, that was a helmet-to-helmet shot, man.
That was just that. Because that was like right at the end of the game. That was when Aaron Rodgers trying to roll out and throw another bomb like he did to Jeff James in that playoff game. And instead, he just got the hell killed. He just got killed on that hit. And I was just like, just get him out of the game, for God's sakes. Please, let's not lose him too tonight.
It kills me just like it did in Arizona in that playoff game in 09 where he got face masked and there was the fumble. This game he comes out, he got hit right in the face, helmet-to-helmet contact. It was a no-call. And then they rolled out a fumble.
Yeah.
I'm
talking about at the end of the game when he tried to roll out and throw one deep when they were it was right at the end of the game.
Okay.
And I think it was Adrian Claiborne just came up and just nailed him. I was just like, get him out of the game.
Another big positive is the continued ascension of Devontae Adams. You know, he finished this game with 8 receptions for 99 yards and a touchdown. he is developing into the boundary receiver that we've hoped that he could be, and the majority of his damage was done, well, really all of it was done, because Jordy Nelson left in the first quarter and never came back. Adams came out, and he played the role of a number one receiver.
Yeah, Adams, I'm telling you, Adams is the real deal. He really took a huge step last year, and I think this year he's just going to keep going up. And this, you know, it is a contract year for Adams this year, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. And I'm going to throw a little shout out to our returning number one fan, Frazier, who's been back at it with the questions. Asked me
champion.
On Twitter. Yeah, asked me if Jordy Nelson or Randall Cobb, injury-wise, is more important to this offense. And at this point, at this stage in their careers, at this stage in the game, and with Adams' ascension, I think Cobb, by the end of the year, Cobb is going to be looked at as more important because he's tearing it up. Jordy Nelson already said 2 to 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and put it out there, not as an indictment against Jordy Nelson, but for the other tools that are around him,
that's not
nice. I would not be surprised if it's 2 years max.
Yeah.
And they start to phase him out of the offense, much like they did Donald Driver, because looking at him at this point, I think he is slower. I don't think he'll ever regain the actual deep speed that he had on the boundary, because his deep catch was on a free play against Seattle, beating a linebacker.
Yeah, his route running, though, he is a much better
runner
than Davante Adams.
He's a fantastic route runner. He's one of the best I've ever seen. And I'm not trying to say anything, like, you know, actually negative about Jordy Nelson. It's so difficult to do. But I think with the ACL tear and his age, I just think that as long as they re-sign Adams and they continue to push him more to the forefront of it, they're going to start to phase Jordy out the same way they did Donald Driver. He'll see less and less time on the field, less and less of a deal with being featured in the offense, and that's just part of the game. But, yeah, I mean, I think next year is his last year as a Packer, but then you talk about Cobb. Cobb is just flat-out tearing it up, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, and that's I don't know. That's a hard question, because you know Nelson and Rodgers, their connection that they have.
Oh yeah,
that's very invaluable. It's like the Marvin Harrison Peyton Manning connection back
yeah.
in the day. But Cobb is just such a different type of wide receiver. A lot of the things Nelson can do, Adams can do on the boundary, but Cobb is such a different type of wide receiver.
Yeah,
he's more of a yards after the catch type of receiver, whereas Nelson's more of a route runner and. I don't know. It'd be hard to lose either one of them. But if I had to choose one to be without, I would say Nelson, because I feel like Cobb can do more things than Nelson at this point. And Adams can do a lot of things Nelson can do. So, but let's hope it's not too serious. Like you said, it's day-to-day right now with
day-to-day.
The quad injury. But
speaking of yards after the catch and your newfound love for Ty Montgomery, guess who's leading the league in yards after the catch?
Well, I'm just going to take a wild guess and say Ty Montgomery.
Exactly. And had they not called the penalty on Martellus Bennett for the pick, Randall Cobb would be number two. They're both in the top 10. And combined, see, actually they're both in the top 5. Ty Montgomery leads the league in yards after the catch going into week 3 with 132. Randall Cobb sits squarely at number 5 with 101 yards after the catch. And they are there are no two teammates on any team in the league outside of Montgomery and Randall Cobb that have put up more yards after the catch together.
That's impressive. And Ty Montgomery just overall continues to look as advertised. We talked about going into week 1, your quote Adrian Peterson saying that the Packers are good at running back. Montgomery is going to be a good back. continues to look like it, even in week two. I think he's got 3 total touchdowns now in the season. He's been just consistently good in whatever's been asked of him. We didn't see much in terms of rushing yards in this last game, but, you know, in that second half, the running game pretty much went out the window. Other than just to keep the defense honest.
And I think you hit the nail on the head before the season started. I think they're looking to use Montgomery a lot like how you talked about the Patriots using, like, a James White. And their running game is based out of the short passing game. They're getting they're getting the ball in the hands of guys like Cobb and Montgomery in space and on short passes and swing passes and things like that, and they're letting them create. And I'm really enjoying it because we've talked on the show about calling the Packers the Yackers before and, you know, whatnot. It's interesting because the stat that I'm seeing, this team right now has a total of 654 receiving yards. 410 of those yards have been produced after the catch. It's just a hair over 60%.
There you go. Hence the name Yackers.
Yep.
And that's what this offense is supposed to be, and that's why...
That's a West Coast offense.
Yeah, and Ty Montgomery is looking more and more like the perfect fit at running back right now. For this type of team, and I'm excited as the season goes on. Like I said, I think he's going to have. He may not be a 1,000-yard rusher, but I think he's more of like a 1,200 or 1,300-yard all-purpose type of guy for this offense.
Oh yeah,
and that's exactly what we need. But Montgomery looks good. And switching over to the defense, looking at the positives here real quick before we switch over to the Bengals coming up on Sunday. We touched on it a little bit when we were talking about the negatives, but, you know, as bad as the secondary as a whole looked, Kevin King looked like he's going to be the real deal. I mentioned it on Twitter. I mentioned it to you. Kevin King looks like the only cornerback we've had over the past couple of years that looks like he could even remotely hang with Julio Jones. When they put King on Jones, he played pretty well. He didn't give up much.
Oh, yeah. Matt Ryan targeted King twice when he was guarding up Jones. He allowed nothing.
Yeah.
He was targeted 4 times by Matt Ryan and gave up nothing. And, and two of those passes were actual pass deflections, actual breakups. And he shows that range, man. He's just so big, and his defense radius is so large that you throw a ball in his vicinity, odds are it's going to get batted down at least. And that led McCarthy to come out and say that, he has earned the right to potentially play more. Potentially my ass. He's going to play more, especially considering the fact that between Randall and Rollins combined on Sunday, they were targeted 11 times between the two of them and allowed 10 catches for 148 yards.
Yeah, let's put King in. And
yeah.
That's the better idea, McCarthy. Kevin King, man, I think he's going to be the guy. He needs to see more playing time. They're going to have your ups and downs. He's going to struggle at times. But a guy like him, as the season wears on, he's going to look better and better. And he's only going to get better. That's what you have to do with a guy like that.
His preseason and these first 2 weeks, he looks like night and day. He looked lost and out of place in the preseason, but here in the regular season, he looks right.
Yeah.
He looks like he belongs, and if they let him play through the season, he will be a much better player come playoff time.
Yeah, I think once the playoffs roll around, if they let him play out throughout the rest of the season, let him start, be a number 2 at least, put him up against some competition, like we're going to see A.J. Green and John Ross coming up this week. Put him on one of those guys, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but put him on one of those guys and say, look, get out there, kid. Let's see what you got. By playoffs, he's going to be – he could be, you know, our number one corner.
I think he's not just going to suddenly wake up one morning and be Richard Sherman.
Yeah, but he has that potential.
You can't expect
the size and
exactly.
The speed.
And
he has the potential.
Frazier also asked me if I think Kevin King is the best pick out of this draft. And I told him, it's going to take more than 140 characters. I think you have to wait. I think you got to give it 2 to 3 years before you really reflect on a draft class. That's generally the rule of thumb. But I think he has the potential to be. We haven't really seen Josh Jones to this point, who I think is the other guy to really watch. And we still haven't seen Vince Beagle at all, or mm-hmm. much of Jamal Williams. Yeah,
or Adams.
So
we haven't seen a lot of the rookies. And yeah, we got the two wide receivers that didn't make the team.
Yeah, so there you go.
Cooper Kupp was there for the taking. But
well, I mean, really all three running backs have their strengths too.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to answer Frazier's question, he could be. He's got the physical tools to be. But we'll save that judgment after for another couple years.
Yeah, because you just don't know. You know, you go back to – you look at some of the drafts and what year was Mike Daniels drafted?
Oh, man. I think that was the 13 draft, and I think he's, like, the only person left.
Yeah, and he was a fourth rounder, so, you know, you never
know. And that draft was god-awful.
Yeah. But at least we found Mike Daniels, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So you just never know. But I think, as of right now, I think Kevin King looks legit, folks. He passes the eye test. We might have a future shutdown corner on our hands here. And one last note that I had on the positives. Clay Matthews, second week in a row, played a great game. Looks really good out there. So heads up to Clay Matthews. For all the people that were saying Clay Matthews is washed up and we needed to trade him, he looks like he's in mid-season form. But, you know, let's knock on wood with all the injuries going around. Clay Matthews is probably on the list next. So.
He looked fast. He looked aggressive. I mean, he looked like Clay Matthews. He looked like what you want and expect Clay Matthews to be.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the negatives. Those are the positives. Tough game to watch. I know about halfway through the probably after Rodgers fumbled the ball. And it was returned for a touchdown. After that, I kind of started to wander around the house a little bit and do other things. But, you know, it is what it is. It's week two. We knew it was going to be a tough game. And things just didn't bounce our way. But I think it all just breaks down to that pass interference call. We just kind of melted down after that. Came back after the half. Had the bad fumble. And it was just one thing after another. Bad night. Bad night all around. But I think we'll bounce back. I think we'll be okay. But to wrap up, Packers and Falcons, let's get the first word. And Ty, you can go first this week. I think I gave you my first word last week.
All right.
First, so hit me with your first word topic for week two.
Well, Mike, my
lay back and
topic
think.
For first word this week, as far as week two is concerned, really actually goes to Kevin King. First word on how do you think his performance goes into his playing time concerning the future?
I think Kevin King showed a lot in this game. I think, like
that
I said,
that was so
Kevin
many
King,
words.
Well, I haven't gotten to my first word yet. This is me thinking out loud. But he showed a lot that game. Like I said, he looked like the only cornerback that could even remotely stick with Julio Jones. You just read the numbers a moment ago. So my first word on Kevin King, and this is a little brazen, going out on a limb a little bit, but lockdown.
Oh, I like it.
I think Kevin King, I just said it a minute ago, but I'm going to reaffirm it now for God and everybody to hear. I'm going to put my stamp on it and put it out there. Kevin King will be a lockdown corner in this league.
Well, my first word on your first word is bold. But I like it, though.
I mean, I was just, for a guy playing in his second pro game to be out there on Julio Jones and be targeted twice and give up nothing against him, four times total and give up nothing. I don't know. I think that's... I'm pretty high on Kevin King after this game,
yeah.
If you can't tell. I think he'll be a future lockdown corner. So my first word on Kevin King after week two, lockdown. Because he locked down Julio Jones, by God.
Hey, it suits me just fine.
All right, your first word to wrap up week two. And it goes to the coaching. And I want your first word on Mike McCarthy's response after the pass interference call on Martellus Bennett.
Chill. As in, Mike McCarthy needs to chill just a little bit there.
R-E-L-A-X, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, just chill. I mean, you don't often see McCarthy fly off the handle like that. He's generally a pretty stoic kind of coach patrolling the sidelines. He gets emotional, you know, and he'll give it to the officials from time to time, but when it comes to the point that you're walking out on, and had he stayed off the field, he probably wouldn't have got called for it.
Yeah.
It's that he came onto the field. So once it reaches that point, you gotta pull yourself back a little bit and you gotta chill. So that's my word on McCarthy. Just chill.
That seems like something Rodgers would have said to him.
Yeah.
Just chill, bro. Just chill.
Hey, Mike, just chill, man.
It's okay. We're going to chill.
I got this.
But moving on here, we're going to take a quick fake sponsor break, and we will be back to preview the Bengals and the Packers this Sunday at Lambeau Field. Could this be a trap game for the Packers? Or is it a get-right game for the Packers? We'll discuss that and get you set for everything you need to know about the Bengals and the Packers coming up on Sunday after a word from our fake sponsors.
Settle back as Marlboro visits Green Bay Stadium and meet the Packers' Don Hutson, greatest pass receiver of all time. Settle back, Don, with your Marlboro. Remember your longest pass play? 1939, Packers against the Cards. 94 yards. Just one of the 101 touchdown passes you caught. More than any other player in National Football League history. You sure showed what the game is all about, Don.
Marlboro showed me what filter smoking's all about.
Well, it's the filter cigarette with the unfiltered taste.
Like they say, you got a lot to like with a Marlboro.
Filter, flavor, pack, or box. Marlboro.
107 left. Ball is at the 8-yard line. Here, Brett Favre, you want a challenge? Try this one. And Favre completes on first down to Harry Sidney, who gets a little running room and gets out of bounds to stop the clock. You could see the veteran smarts of Sidney. He knew what to do. Ricardo McDonald ran him out for Cincinnati.
Brett Favre certainly has his work cut out for him today. So does this man, Mike Holmgren, who will be the real architect of this drive, calling all the plays.
Second down, 7 for the Pack. Is it and gets it to Sterling Sharp out across midfield to the 46-yard line. Rod Jones making the stop for Southern Methodist. Second big catch of the quarter for Sharp. Clock running. Sharp is hurt.
It's the same injury he had when he scored the touchdown. It's a rib injury. Hard to get his hands up over his head, but he did that to make that last catch.
Over the middle, here comes Workman. And now the Packers must use a timeout. No, they don't have one left. Clock running with the ball at the 35. No timeouts remaining. Favre will stop the clock here, and he does.
Favre, with his leading receiver, big play man, Sterling Sharp, holding that rib.
What an effort by Sharp.
It's a very painful injury. Anytime you hurt any of those ribs, but here, he knows it's hurting, but he's still got to reach up and go for that ball and makes that catch and then come down on the rib again.
It was the safety man, Fernandez Vincent, who was late with the help. That allowed Sharp to run free past Rod Jones down the sideline, and he was hurting before the catch, Ahmad.
Certainly was. It was right after that touchdown play, and now Sharp is on the sideline. Can't help him there.
So with their best receiver out of the game, from the 35, 19 seconds left. Ball, puck, throws, touchdown!
right, folks, we are back after those encouraging sponsors. Everybody, check out the great sponsors here on the show. They're fake, and if you call the numbers or visit the websites or whatever, it's probably not a working thing anymore, but we appreciate them anyway. Let's get into it. The Packers look to have a bounce back coming up on Sunday as they host the Cincinnati Bengals, the lowly Cincinnati Bengals, who I don't think have scored a touchdown yet in 2017. But I'm going to give you folks some reasons to worry. Ty seems a little more at ease with this game than I do. It is at home. It is in Lambeau, so that is a plus. The storylines coming into this game, the Bengals are the only team that Aaron Rodgers has yet to beat in his career, other than the Packers, of course. The Bengals have seemed to have Aaron Rodgers' number over his career, never beaten him. Is this the game that Aaron Rodgers finally puts an end to his losing streak to the Cincinnati Bengals?
You know, I think so. I think
if there's time, it's now.
If there's a time, the time is now. And you know, I think the Bengals' numbers on defense can be a little misleading. Their offensive numbers are bad. There's no way around that. I mean, they rank dead last in the league in points scored, 23rd in the league in rush yards, 22nd in the league in pass yards, 27th in the league in overall yards. But their defense, when you switch to it, they're 7th in the league, giving up 16.5 points a game, 5th in the league in total yards, giving up 267, and 1st in the league in pass yards, giving up 104.5. But that's where you have to look at who they've played.
Yeah, after 2 weeks, and especially that Thursday night game against the Texans, kind of
got killed by Baltimore 20-0 in week one. And Joe Flacco's still having back issues. That says a lot.
Yeah, it's not like the Ravens are a high-flying offense or anything.
Then Houston. Oh, Houston.
Yeah.
And the key thing here, and I didn't mention it, and one reason that I'm not very worried about this game, is they rank next to last in rushing yards on defense, given 162.5 rushing yards a game through two games. Ring the bell for Ty Montgomery.
Ding, ding. Yeah, I mean, look, after 2 weeks, the Bengals look like a hot, steaming...
They're the Bungles again, is what they look like.
They look like the Bungles again. But the reason... it's not so much the history between Aaron Rodgers not being able to beat the Bengals. I think that's just coincidence.
Zimmer.
Yeah, and Mike Zimmer, yeah. A big reason for that. But the one thing that has me worried, other than all the injuries that the Packers are dealing with right now, that could be a big, big red flag. Outside of that, it's something that I like to call the laser effect. What is the laser effect? Well, over the past, after the debacle against the Texans in the first 2 weeks in general, the Bengals fired their offensive coordinator and promoted Bill Lazor as their new offensive coordinator. Now, why am I so worried about Bill Lazor? Who the hell's Bill Lazor? I mean, he's got a cool name. Agreed. I think we'll all agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
But there just seems to be every time in the NFL when a team switches head coaches in the middle of the season or switches offensive coordinators, the very next week, they seem to play really well. They seem to respond. They seem to win. You go back to last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars were terrible. The Tennessee Titans were on a roll. They had just beaten the Kansas City Chiefs. They had just beaten the Denver Broncos. Then they go to Jacksonville and just get completely trounced by the Jags, the lowly Jags. Why is that? Doug Marrone got promoted as the new head coach the next week. This goes all the way back. You go back, we talked about the Ravens a minute ago, that year that their offense was terrible, and they fired Cam Cameron in the middle of the season and promoted Jim Caldwell to offensive coordinator. Very next week, they look like an offensive powerhouse. The thing when a team switches coaches mid-season like this, it's very hard for the team playing them the next week to really scout and really get an idea of who they're playing. There's no tape on what Bill Lazor likes to do offensively. There's no, you know, you don't know. You're gonna you can't plan for it.
Here's my counter to that, Mike, is that they're an unfamiliar opponent anyways.
Yes, but still, if the offensive coordinator was still the same and some guy that's never been an offensive coordinator in the league before, Bill Lazor's never been an offensive coordinator in the league before.
Yeah,
he's new. He's going to come out and throw. Not only is he going to come out and throw things that the Packers haven't seen on film, that's just not out there yet. But this is, you got to remember, this is a desperate Bengals team. They're trying not to go 0-3.
No, I'll give you that.
So they're going to come out and throw the kitchen sink at the Packers to begin with, and now you're going to have the fear of the unknown as well against the Packers team that are dealing with a bunch of injuries right now. So with that said, is this a trap game for the Packers, or is it a get-right game for the Packers?
Well, Mike, let me counter your effect with my own effect.
Okay, go ahead.
And I call it the Clements effect. The Tom Clements effect. The effect that seemed to bog down an offense horribly. An effect that seemed to slow things down as if players were walking through sand and Aaron Rodgers was wearing welding goggles trying to throw passes. You may get something good with a different coordinator and a different guy calling the plays. You might also get a pile of hot steaming garbage. And the thing with the NFL is any game can be treated like a trap game. In this league, there's so much parity. So many teams creep up on each other and surprise other teams that you can't tread lightly with any game through the regular season. It's not like the NBA or MLB where you've got a long season and a billion games to play and you can afford to lose four games in a row sometimes in those leagues. Every game matters here. Not on the level of college football, but they matter. Even, you know, these early games, you know, the week 1 and 2 could go a long way in deciding our playoff seed. These games matter.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about this team going into this game thinking, yeah, we got it.
I mean, it's the Bengals have some real talent on offense.
Oh, they
do. Their offensive numbers make no sense when you look at the talent. They got AJ Green, John Ross. They drafted Joe Mixon, and outside of Joe Mixon, they got Giovanni Bernard. They got Jeremy Hill. I think their offensive line took the real big hit in the offseason. They lost Andrew Whitworth. Their former Pro Bowl offensive tackle. They lost Kevin Zeitler Zeitler, however you pronounce his last name. He lost him to the Browns. So their offensive line probably has a lot to do with their struggles on offense.
Well, I'm sure it does.
But after what Julio Jones and top flight receivers can do to our secondary and have done in the past to our secondary many times, AJ Green, he's no slouch. You know, he's up there with the best of them.
You add
the speed of a guy like John Ross to that as well. Tyler Eifert, tight end, really good tight end.
The thing with John Ross is the same thing with Jeff Janis. Just because you can run that far and that fast doesn't mean you can catch it. And he struggled with drops these first 2 weeks really, really badly, to the point that the coaching staff has called him out publicly on it and said, we can't have this. So,
yeah.
Speed kills, but you got to catch it. And
yeah, it ain't a track race,
I think we see a lot of Kevin King this week. I think we see a lot of Kevin King matching up on AJ Green. And this is the thing with King, and what makes him so special is not only his size, because he is uncommonly tall for a corner. I mean, him and Julio Jones are the same height.
Mm-hmm.
But Kevin King is fast. Yeah. Kevin King, you know, he's not Sam Shields, but who is? You know, but he is fast. He's the fastest corner we have on this team at this point when concerned with 40 times. The only player on the defense faster than Kevin King is Josh Jones. And I think we're going to start to see some more Josh Jones. I want to see him on the field, not as a safety, but as a linebacker. There are less opportunities to make mistakes at inside linebacker in this scheme. And if Kentrell Bryce can't go, I want to see Morgan Burnett back at strong safety and Josh Jones at linebacker more. I want to see what we have there. Because if he's at linebacker and is allowed to be a bit more of a rover, good God, he could cause some real havoc.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll do that, though. I think they really like Morgan Burnett playing in the box, playing that nitro
position. Oh, no, I think they do, too. And, I'd still like to see Jones at line or at safety. I mean, that's his position.
Yeah.
But I think as the season wears on, we're going to see a mixture of the two just because of the physical tools Jones has to play so fast and just everywhere and his playmaking ability. But in this game, I think Kevin King comes out and he may end up being the star of this game.
I certainly hope so. And that was a big question. You talked about McCarthy coming out saying Kevin King has earned some more playing time. And this would be a big test for King, especially if they match him up on A.J. Green. Well, talked about a minute ago before the break how much I was impressed with his ability to keep up with Julio Jones, we'll say. If he can do that with A.J. Green, maybe not shut him down, but just compete.
Limit him.
Yeah, limit him. You know, compete against A.J. Green. God forbid we got Demaryius Randall or any of those fucking jackoffs. I don't then we're screwed. But then you also got to remember that Andy Dalton is the quarterback, and I've just never been an Andy Dalton fan. I think
he has regressed so much.
Yeah, I mean, and that, I don't. I was never high on him to begin with. I don't know if
no.
So
he's not a quarterback that's going to go out there and win you the game. That's not who he is.
No. He's not.
And I'm not saying that the team in the past has won in spite of Andy Dalton because he hasn't been that bad in the past. But they've won. I'm not sure how to phrase it. They've won alongside Andy Dalton as opposed to really because of Andy Dalton.
The Bengals have had some very talented teams over his period, over his tenure.
Especially
so
on defense.
I think Andy Dalton works best when he's not asked to do much. He's asked to play within himself, kind of.
Yeah.
Whereas Aaron Rodgers is asked to play not only within himself, but within everybody else on the team.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I think this is a get-back-on-track game. Aaron Rodgers is not having to compete against the guy he was in the MVP race with last year.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is going to play a big part. I mean, this is a quarterback-driven league. We've mentioned that a billion times on the show. So if you're just matching up quarterbacks, I mean, of course, Packers have a huge edge in my book. But, sometimes the running game, and you look at the Bengals, they got three very good running backs. And we saw, especially if Mike Daniels is not able to go in this game, we saw how much his loss affected the Packers' run defense against Atlanta last week. And, we talked about it with the injuries, too. Jake Ryan is probably the best run-defending linebacker on this team. It doesn't look like he might not be able to go in this game. So how much are you afraid?
I don't know, man. I'm not afraid
up against these guys.
I'm not afraid of this run game. Like I said, they're ranked 23rd in the league, but I don't think even that is the reason that I'm not as afraid of him. I'm also increasingly impressed with Blake Martinez as his game continues to round itself out.
Yeah.
He's not as good of a run stopper as Jake Ryan is. He's not quite as big, but he's getting better as the weeks go on as being a complete linebacker. But I think it's a pretty well sure bet that Bulaga steps back in this week. So we'll at least have him back, and he'll move to left tackle, and that'll shift Kyle Murphy back to his more natural position at right tackle. And we've seen Bulaga play left tackle before in a pinch, and he's very capable there. He's fine. So yeah. I think if you have him back at either tackle spot, and even if you have Kyle Murphy at right tackle, who the more I see of him, the less I worry, I think this offense can come out and just by their own performance force the Bengals to try to pass to keep up with them. And I think that could really end up spelling doom for this Cincinnati team.
Yeah, I think the Bengals are going to want to come in and run the ball. I mean, I think when you look at the injury report, if Mike Daniels can't play, if Jake Ryan can't play, I think they see a weakness there. You don't want Andy Dalton throwing the ball 40 times.
I mean, no,
that's just a given. But you know, looking at the Bengals defense, if Bulaga can play, that is a big plus. But if he can't, and we're back with Justin McCray and Kyle Murphy, didn't Jari Evans, did you say he was full participant in practice? He should be good to go.
Yeah, he was back. He was a full participant again.
Okay, well, any concerns about this Bengals defense, especially up in the front seven? Vontaze Burfict, really good player. Geno Atkins, really good player.
Geno is the main concern for me.
Yeah.
Because he's much in the same mold of a Mike Daniels. He's a... I saw somebody say it the other day, and I love the description of it. Sawed off. They're both a little shorter at 6 foot for their positions, but man, that gives them such a natural advantage in the leverage game. So Geno Atkins is always a guy to watch for. I think he's gonna be a guy they're gonna have to key in on and make sure that he doesn't just blow through the line all the time and disrupt the plays. But again, I think our offense is going to be able to put up points, and if week one says anything, and then even what they started to do last week, and I think it looked like what they wanted to do is do some ball control. I don't think this offense at this point, especially without having a guy with the speed that Jordy Nelson used to have, they're not a quick strike offense anymore so much.
Yeah.
I think this is more of we're going to see more of a traditional West Coast team that gets the ball in the hands of its playmakers, lets them create more. They pass to set up the run. They use the short pass in lieu of a running game a lot of times, and they're going to look to really come out and try to dominate time of possession, and I think that may end up being what rounds out this team's identity come, you know, November, December.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what the Patriots do. I mean, the Patriots are not they're not a big explosive team. They just kind of dink and dunk down the field.
Yeah, they're not what they were in 07.
Yeah.
When Brady was just bombing it to Moss the whole season.
Yeah, they're very based on ball control, and I think that's what the Packers do, and that's what they want to do. And I think the Packers are going to want to, especially if Jordy's out or Cobb or both, they're going to want to run the ball with Ty Montgomery.
Yeah.
A lot.
I think
we're
going to see more Jamal Williams, too. That's another thing I didn't touch on before with Montgomery is he leads all running backs with snaps played in the league by a pretty good margin. And that can't continue all season. He's got to have some kind of a break.
I think he will once the season wears on and the rookies start to get
a little more
comfortable playing at this level.
Well, and they're going to start to give Williams more snaps.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. It would make sense, especially if they keep this at a predominantly running game. But I still think early in the season like this, I still think Ty Montgomery's the main guy. I think Jamal Williams will he'll see maybe five carries, if that, in this game.
I can see that.
Especially if unless the Packers can get out to a big lead early or something like that and then really lean on the run, then you might see some more carries for Jamal Williams. But I really think this game's going to be closer than people expect. I think the Bengals are going to come out swinging. They don't want to go 0-3. The new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Lazor.
Lazor, man. Major Lazor. He's keep an eye on him. He's up to no good. I don't know. I just feel like this game's going to be closer than people expect. I think the Packers, they can come out on top, but I think they're going to have to can't look past the Bengals. Just put the first 2 weeks out of their mind, because this is a different offense now with a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And they still got plenty of playmakers. Seem convinced. You don't seem to be this at all.
I don't know, man. You make a convincing argument. You do. I just don't buy in to every single time a team makes a mid-season switch, they come out and do something awesome. It's happened. I'm going to give you that.
I'm not saying the rest of their season is going to be awesome, but I know that the initial week
after
it happens.
Even a game back. But at the same time, sometimes a bad team is just a bad team.
I just don't think the Bengals are all that bad of a team, though. On paper, they look. I mean, I thought maybe they would have a bounce back year, if anything.
There's also some issues in that locker room, because there have been some anonymously quoted Bengals players, several of them, saying that they wish that they would bench Andy Dalton and sign Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, that's very true, too. I think Marvin Lewis has just been there for too long.
I think he's lost the locker room.
I think he has, too. And I think we're seeing that with a couple of teams around the league. And the Packers might be one of those teams. McCarthy's been there for a while.
I still think the Packers are borderline on that. I haven't changed my opinion on that since last year.
Yeah, I still think... No, hush. She's a loud-ass bitch tonight.
It's like Parcells has always said. He always... And that's why he moved on from team to team. It's not that he was fired. He made the choice more often than not. You can only stay somewhere... I think he said 8 to 10 years max the message is lost. That's why Lombardi left Green Bay. He had been there 10 years. He had those players for all those years. And how many different ways can you say the same things over and over and still keep a guy's motor running?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why he went to Washington. Yeah, I think that's why Mike Holmgren went to Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just after so long, it's just kind of like you don't feel like there's any. I guess you'd have to say the message gets stale. I think that's what's happening in Cincinnati right now with Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis can't win a playoff game. You could say that's what's happening in New Orleans with Sean Payton. Sean Payton, a great, great play caller.
Oh, yeah. Great offensive mind.
Yeah, great offensive mind. But it just seems like no matter what they do, no matter how they address their problems, it doesn't seem to get better.
I feel like the only coach you can really exempt from this discussion is Belichick, and that's just because they're consistent winners.
Yeah, once you've won 5 Super Bowls, I think people
will
listen to you.
And I still feel like Belichick is the only coach left in the NFL that instills any kind of genuine fear in guys for their jobs. He is a very much a coach that would have been so at home in the 60s and 70s because coaches were meant to be feared then. And now I still think too many coaches want to be buddies with their players. And that ends up losing you games. But
yeah. So I don't know. There could be some real upheaval in that Bengals locker room. That could be playing a bigger... I mean, firing the offensive coordinator, that's just kind of a scapegoat move.
Really. I mean, that's... So.
I don't know
that's
how much
it's just
it'll
something
change.
To show that it's an action to show that, oh, hey, we're trying to do something.
We're making changes.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, but is that really the change you needed to make?
Probably not. But
yeah.
Who knows? The laser effect could
could really be just like saying laser effect.
I don't know. I just whatever. But yeah, I think this could be either a get right game or a trap game for the Packers. I think it is a bit of a trap game for the Packers, but I think if Aaron Rodgers is going to beat the Bengals, it's going to be this week. No better time to do it. This team's really reeling right now, and if Dom Capers and this defense can handle whatever Bill Lazor can throw at them, then I think they'll be fine.
We'll see whether or not he can join the ranks of the Jim Bob Cooters of the world.
Yes, so, Jim Bob Cooter. That's
great, man. Name.
Yes, no better name. No better name. Bill Lazor, Jim Bob Cooter, hell of a duo. But let's get into what you've all came here for, the main event of the show. It's week three. It's stat lines. Bengals and Packers, stat lines for week three. Are we hitting the Ty Montgomery again this week?
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. Since I was the unequivocal winner in week two, I'll let you go first this week. I want to hear what you got, what you've seen in the future for this Bengals-Packers game. Will there be a laser effect?
Well, Mike, I'm gonna leave the crystal ball on the shelf, fire up that DeLorean, and zip out right to 88 miles per hour, going down those highways. And I'm going with Aaron Rodgers in this game for the first part of my stat lines. I think he had a rough week last week, but he still produced some decent stats. I think this week he has a better day and still produces. Though not quite close to the 350 that he got, I think he's still going to be a little bit closer to the realm of Earthlings in this game, just getting back on track. So I think Rodgers is going to come out pretty efficient, more efficient than last week, coming out and throwing 29 for 40 in this game for 303 yards and 2 touchdown passes.
Not a bad way for Aaron Rodgers to play against his the one
nemesis.
Team he hasn't beat. Yeah, I guess you could
yeah.
Call him a nemesis.
And staying with the offense here and going with the Kentucky kid, Randall Cobb, I think he plays in this game. I think he comes in feeling pretty good, having some rest for the week with his little bit of a nick that he received in the Falcons game. I think he comes out, does some damage. Through the air here with 6 receptions for 72 yards, and he'll get that first touchdown of the season. Most of those yards after the catch.
Hey, that's almost exactly. Let me look at this real quick. Yeah, that's almost exactly. No, never mind. I was like, that's almost exactly my Randall Cobb prediction last week.
Oh, well, and I'm gonna veer off to the defense as I generally like to do for my last stat line. Going to the rookie well on this one. I think we're going to see a lot of Kevin King here, and I think this is going to be Kevin King's debut on the stat lines. I think we're going to get close, too. I think King is going to see a lot of A.J. Green. He may see some John Ross, but I think King comes out with 3 tackles, 2 pass deflections, and his first pro interception.
Wow. Big numbers there are for Kevin King. First career interception coming against A.J. Green. Would you go on
I think
and say that?
I think so. I'm going to say it. I'm going to be bold with it. I like it. You were bold with the lockdown first word. I'm going to be bold with my stat lines here. I think that pick comes against A.J. Green.
I'm going to put that in a little asterisk here. Interception against A.J. Green. I'm going to hold you to that. If it comes true, I owe you a beer or something. That's.
I'll take it.
That's all I can get you, but, it's something. All right, I like it. Aaron Rodgers, 29 of 40, 303 yards, 2 touchdowns on the day. Not bad for Aaron Rodgers to, I assume, get the first victory over the Cincinnati Bengals of his career. Randall Cobb, 6 receptions, 72 yards, and a touchdown. I think that's very doable. I think he's due for a touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin King. Big, big breakout game. 3 tackles, 2 passes defensed, and 1 interception against A.J. Green. Bold, very bold move. Lockdown, I'm telling you, lockdown. Moving on to my stat lines for week 3. He did me good last week. I'm going to do him good again this week. Ty Montgomery, he's gonna be a big focal point in this game, I believe. 135 yards all-purpose.
Love it.
1 rushing touchdown for Ty Montgomery. Number 88, the running back.
The running back.
Exactly. And I'm going to go Aaron Rodgers. First time this year so far that I'm going with Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to have a decent day. Not as good as yours. I think he's going to stray, especially if Cobb or Nelson can't play. I think he's going to be, I guess, handcuffed a little bit. But I think it'll be mostly a Ty Montgomery type of day. But I think Aaron Rodgers will do fine. 24-35, 266 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception. I think he'll try to fit one in to maybe another bad route if a guy like Trevor Davis or Jeff Janis has to play again. But we'll see. I think he's still trying to get right. I still think he's trying to get into midseason form. But once he gets going, he gets going. And for my third stat line, I'm moving over to the defense. And a guy that has been very impressive in 2 weeks of play, I'm going with Blake Martinez. 10 total tackles, 2 for a loss. I think Blake Martinez has a very good game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So those are your stat lines for week 3. Can Ty Montgomery make it 3 for 3?
Oh, man.
And bringing our stat lines to truth.
That would be something right there. I like your call on Martinez, though. I think he's going to start getting his due. I mean, he had a sack in the Falcons game, too.
Yeah. So I think, and especially if Jake Ryan can't go, I think it's just going to keep him out on the field for pretty much every snap of the defense, unless you're in a dime package or something like that.
Then you'll see, Joe Thomas come in there ready to, maybe he'll knock the stripes off somebody's helmet. That would be something.
If Joe Thomas can knock the stripes off the Cincinnati Bengals helmet, if he can do that, he's I'm getting a Joe Thomas jersey. He's officially my new favorite player. People be like, what jersey is that? I'm like, Joe Thomas, bro, don't you know?
Who? Like, from Cleveland? Yeah, man, the other one.
He plays for you guys now? Shut up. But you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like. We'll be your favorite player if you want. At Blue Cheese Radio, at Titletown Ty, at Radiation Mike. Do like your boy Frazier. Hit us up on Twitter. Give us your questions and feedbacks. Try to do some live tweeting throughout the games when I can. That's always fun. Just to watch Twitter completely implode.
Oh, God.
When a night like the other night happens. That's always enjoyable. I like to jump in and join in on that. But something that never implodes. Always up. Always going. Always good stuff. PackToTheFuture.com. Anything and everything Packers. Just hit up packtothefuture.com. You get podcasts, articles, you get video. I mean, anything and everything you want for Green Bay Packers, by the fans, for the fans, packtothefuture.com. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a big old like on Facebook. We'll like you back. Anytime the show drops, you will find out on Facebook first. So find us at www.facebook.com/bluecheeser. Is it / or /
It is /
/ Blue Cheese Radio. I always get that mixed up because I hear / from some folks and / from others. So I'm just
It's / in the web address.
Yeah. So take that for all you people that say / then hit us up on iTunes. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. Never ever miss a show. Why would you want to? Our stat lines have been just primo choice. We're telling you what's going to happen in these games before they actually happen, folks. How can you not?
You don't need
that?
Tony Romo. You got us.
Yeah, Tony Romo. Tony Romo ain't got shit on Blue Cheese Radio. So hit us up on iTunes, and of course the Blue Cheese Mailbag, always open for business at askbluecheese@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions here on the show. Ty, anything left you want to say? Are you at all afraid of the laser effect coming up on Sunday?
I am not afraid of the laser effect coming up on Sunday. I guess the last word I have is, and I congratulated him on Twitter, speaking of Joe Thomas, the Cleveland Brown, hit those 10,000 consecutive snaps. Pretty an amazing accomplishment there. So congratulations. I'm sure he doesn't listen to us, but congratulations to the Browns' Joe Thomas, the tackle. And
bless his heart.
You know, it's
10,000 snaps.
Way to go,
man. 10,000 snaps is something in the NFL, but 10,000 snaps with the Cleveland Browns,
yeah,
that's an accomplishment. That's an accomplishment. But I guess that's going to do it for us this week on Blue Cheese Radio. We'll be back next week to hopefully recap a Packers victory over the Cincinnati Bengals. But you never know when the laser effect may hit. I'm trademarking that. I don't give a damn. But until then, I'm Mike.
And I'm Ty.
And there is your dagger!
No. Here's how it's done.
And there is your dagger!